At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And free fitness training to help you mix up your routine. Plus, most clubs are open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends February 28th. See home club for details.
This episode includes discussion about suicide. The National Alliance on Mental Illness is an organization that Sutton supports. I've included a link in the show notes. The nation's largest grassroots mental health organization. They are here to help. You are not alone. It's Andy's Girls. It's episode 641, I'm pretty sure. And it almost feels like this is the first part of a two-parter, except in reverse, which I will explain. So I recorded with a guest. When did we record? I want to say on Wednesday. And one of my favorite people. And she was a goddamn trooper because one of her kiddos was home from school. So there were points where she was wrangling her, and I was like, do you want to reschedule? She was wrangling her kiddo while we were recording. So true, a true literal champion. But we focused the episode on Beverly Hills, and I hadn't seen the episode when I messaged her and said, hey, maybe we should focus our episode on BH. I was just thinking, oh, we're recording this on Wednesday. It's usually earlier. That's earlier in the week than I typically record, but I was happy to. And was like, oh, wait, there's a BH on the horizon. This is perfect timing because now that we, may its memory be a blessing, don't have Salt Lake City anymore. And P.S., I am still doing a reunion deep dive, even though I know we've gotten into it on a bunch of recent AGs. There's more to say. Ditto, unfortunately, New York. But circling back to what I was talking about. So I had said to her, you know, like, let's maybe focus on BH. She was like, great, great, great. And then I watched Beverly Hills, sobbed my fucking ass off, started the after show, but didn't have a chance to finish it. And then we recorded. And honestly, I feel like it's been living in my bones for a couple days, not in a bad way, just in the sense that it was so meaningful to me. It was so impactful that I was like, motherfucker, I think I'm gonna do this again. And I was doing it wasn't an Ask Me Anything on Instagram, but someone messaged and was like, please, you know, record a bunch of eps about the most recent Beverly Hills. They found it very impactful too. And I said in response, I was like, honestly, I'm thinking about doing two episodes. So the timing of recording this on Friday night, having already recorded talking about it on Wednesday with a pal, is ever so slightly disjointed. Normally, historically with Andy's Girls, I would record a solo deep dive and then chat with the guest. So I'm doing this a little bit in reverse, and I am sure as a result, there are going to be things that I say on this episode that might conflict with things that I said on the AG already recorded that you guys will get soon, or not. You know, maybe it's just a little bit of a rehashing, but it really was one of those episodes. So I thought to myself, I'm going to record a second episode. So I just rewatched it. So I've only seen the episode twice and sobbed my fucking ass off a second time. This time I was able to watch the after show in full. Time management is a joy. And so I really feel comfortable talking about it. Although I felt comfortable before, but it just really, it landed for me in all the ways. Before I do that, though, I do want to discuss some really sad news that Teddy Mellencamp known as Teddy Joe Carrot for AGs, announced on social and frankly to the world earlier in the week. She actually announced it on Wednesday, so we found out right before we started recording. Some really sad and upsetting news. So I am going to pull up her announcement. Teddy shared on social, "For the last several weeks, I've been dealing with severe and debilitating headaches. Yesterday, the pain was unbearable and required hospitalization. After a CT scan and MRI, doctors found multiple tumors on my brain, which they believe had been growing for at least 6 months. Two of the tumors will be surgically removed today. The remaining smaller tumors will be dealt with via radiation at a later date. I am blessed to be surrounded by my children, family, friends, doctors, nurses, and surgeons who are doing everything possible to get me back into better health. Thank you to everybody who has reached out and to everyone who has supported me along this journey." An incredibly upsetting chapter for Teddy, something that obviously took all of us, understandably so, by surprise. She's since had that brain surgery she mentioned, and her estranged husband, Edwin, took to social and said, "So many people asking for updates. All I will say right now is surgery went well. That said, I've never seen Teddy in so much pain. She's finally getting some needed rest. I know she is so grateful for the outpouring of love." And I don't have access to Teddy's social because I am blocked, which has been mentioned on previous Annie's Girls episodes. But I've seen, you know, through content creators reposting that Kyle has been with her, you know, some of her good friends, her family has been there. She's been using humor as much as she can, which is an incredibly emotionally intelligent way to process trauma, and has mentioned that her kids are there with her. And, you know, Teddy is a goddamn survivor. She has gone through, I think, at least 17 different melanomas, skin cancers, that she's been treated for over the last several years. And it's just a devastating update for her, for her family, for those young kids. And so I'm just thinking of her. And it is also a reminder to the universe, to myself, to whomever, the gods above, BCC Andrew Cohen, that it's possible in life, on the podcast, in talking about Bravo, to potentially dislike someone. I would argue that's a pretty realistic assumption, assessment of what I've said about Teddy, which has been really focused on All In and on her work as a housewife and I guess a friend of. And also, at the exact same time, never want them to go through what Teddy is going through now, the challenges that she is facing for herself and her family. It's like we all, or many of us, hopefully most of us, which feels optimistic these days, but that's where we are, can hold multiple truths at once. And it is possible to criticize someone's work, professional, yada, yada, personality, and never wish ill on them or their family. And certainly from a health perspective, you know, just to know, the episode that I recorded on Wednesday, I'm just going to reference over and over again. Am I crying on that episode? Yes. Is that a surprise? Absolutely not. And I can feel the tears coming now. And I would just, you know, like to say that, you know, from the yada yada that I've, my family has gone through, my dad died December 1st, I would never, especially regardless, whatever phrase you want to use, want someone to go through the experience that we went through. Obviously, every challenge is individual. And I do want to note that my dad died of cancer. We do not know. And I absolutely hope that her tumors are not malignant. We don't know what is going to happen in Teddy's journey next. I'm sure she will update the Bravo community and public when she feels safe and comfortable doing so, which I absolutely can respect and appreciate. And so there we are. I'm just thinking of her and her family. And I think for anyone who has been touched with a family member going through health challenges, who is also a Bravoholic, I think you can certainly appreciate that we can hold someone accountable, criticize someone, dislike them, whatever, and never want them to go through what Teddy is going through now for herself, for her family, for her kids. It's just a lot. So I'm thinking of her and her family, and I'm sure there will be more info to come. And I hope that it is positive, because it's just... you know, it's just a devastating challenge for her to go through after so many previous chapters with these melanomas. And also, you know, listen, I've said a lot about Kyle and Teddy as her like little sister. And, you know, sometimes that can get kind of annoying when it feels like Kyle's trying to position her to come back on the show. But the truth is, they really are family. And, you know, Teddy has mentioned, I don't know if they were still doing this, but probably, why not, that Teddy was like sort of living with Kyle during her separation from Edwin. And so they are just so incredibly close. And it's just really important to have people in your corner when you're going through something like this. And so I'm thankful that they have each other. I really genuinely am. And I think we saw a lot of this in this episode, but you know, Kyle is a nurturer. She really is. I feel like I can feel people rolling their eyes at me going into my like Team Kyle mode, but fuck you, I am. She is. She's a nurturer. I think she's an incredible mom. I think she is surely an incredible sister to Teddy. And I think, you know, with our other sisters, you know, it's a challenge. They're on their own, you know, journey, one that we call life. And so I was really thankful to Sutton that she had Garcelle and Kyle with her, because I could think of no two better examples, except actually I'm going to add an asterisk to this, which I'll add in a second, but no two better examples on that cast of people you would want in your corner, sisters, genuinely. I think Sutton's relationship with Garcelle and Kyle crosses something that is not just friendship, certainly not just co-stars. I really do think that they have a bond. And maybe some of that is because they've each lost their mother, not both of their parents. Obviously, we saw Sutton's mom this week. She's very much with us. Very vibrant and zesty, Reba. I think that, you know, there is something incredibly special about Sutton going through what she went through this week and having specifically Garcelle and Kyle, because I think they have different ways of supporting her, but they are nurturers. They are carers. They are communicators. And it's great that Sutton had validation from them and support from them, because you know she had to be really fucking scared. Like, there's no other way to honestly sort of describe her feelings than that. The asterisk I could add of somebody like in the future, if there was ever a challenging moment, is Jennifer Tilly, because in watching both parts of the after show, Jennifer Tilly's just kind of like translation of everything was so specific, communicated so effectively, not with any kind of like malice or disrespect at all. Obviously, Jennifer Tilly, I can't just say Jennifer, that feels strange. Jennifer Tilly and Sutton are very close friends. I mean, talking about sisters, they absolutely are. And Jennifer Tilly, I'm sure has had a lot of experience handling Reba because she's been in Sutton's life for so long. They mention a story at the very, very end of part two of the after show that like they were in Paris and lost Sutton's mom. And my ears perked up. I was like, what the fuck happened? I guess they like dropped her off at a hair salon and then went wherever and then forgot where they had dropped her off. Which to me, I was like, oh, that must have been an event. How did you figure it out? I mean, I remember I was, this was a while ago, working as a personal assistant to a Academy nominated singer. And it was like one of the first days of work. And she gave me dry cleaning to drop off. And I was not a good assistant. It was I had a learning curve for a specific personality type, but also like knowing how to do, you know, basic life skills stuff. And some like accounting and things that I didn't know how to like figure out checkbook shit. But I learned on the job. But I remember I like grabbed the, was it, I was dropping off dry cleaning or picking it up. I think I was dropping it off. I don't remember, but I like grabbed whatever, went outside and then realized I had forgotten which dry cleaner it was. And so I was like standing there on Lexington Avenue on the Upper East Side and it took me for fucking ever. I don't know how I figured it out because I don't know if I hadn't written it down or something, or she was like, it's really close nearby. And so I was like, okay, I'll just find it. Like Rhode Island memory. I fully did not remember where it was. And she never asked me why it took so long. I think, unfortunately, probably didn't really seem like a shock to her that it took me longer than it should have. But it was a moment. So that was like dry cleaning. To forget your mom where you put her in a foreign country is just impeccable. And that woman being Reba, honestly, I bet Reba can take care of herself. I mean, that is, you know, the understatement of the millennium. So anyway, so that was just a little moment at the tail end of the after show. And I always hype, I feel like I'm an ambassador for Bravo's after shows on YouTube, but I cherish them. And there are specific franchises that I think just have solid after shows where I'm like, oh shit, there's like news happening during this moment. So I cannot more highly recommend certainly watching Beverly Hills after shows, because you get those charmed moments. And Jennifer Tilly on the after show just really describing and sort of hypothesizing her thoughts and feels about Sutton and her mom's relationship, and then sort of contrasting it with her relationship with her ex-husband, who she considers her best friend of 30 years, but someone who was really withholding of praise. And his explanation to her was like, well, you're an actress, you know, your head'll get too big. I don't need to tell you that you were good in that movie or that I love you or whatever else. And Jennifer Tilly is, you know, explaining to Garcelle and Sutton and us, you know, that as an actor, it's like throwing a, I forget the exact example, but sort of like throwing a penny in a well, where you can't be told that enough. And I would argue it's not specific to performance, although there is a neuroses and paranoia that can come from existing in a, or trying to exist in a job and occupation where you're just constantly dismissed, not where failure is like at the absolute forefront. Learning how to survive failure is, I think, an important skill set for anybody going into the performing arts with auditions and everything else. But I thought it was really impactful. So anyway, just circling back to the episode itself, there's a lot to say. There's apparently a lot I have, I guess, already said. I do want to share before really getting into it, an organization that Sutton has done a lot of work with, NAMI, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They're the United States' largest grassroots mental health organization dedicated to building better lives for the millions of Americans affected by mental illness. And there's a link in show notes to, again, NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Certainly this episode, as well the future episode, is going to include a lot of conversation about mental health, depression, seemingly chronic depression, and suicide. And so I just wanted to share those that resource, which is also, you can find a link in the show notes for this episode. So I got a message from somebody, an AG, after they watched this episode of Beverly Hills, who said it reminded them of the fishes episode from The Bear. And I was like, that's a very fucking astute. That is a wildly astute comparison, because that really landed for me. I'm someone, I don't know if I've done a taking it personally on The Bear. I really should, and I would be happy to rewatch the first couple seasons just on an afternoon, frankly. But I fucking love The Bear, and that Fishes episode featuring Jamie Lee Curtis is so chaotic and so challenging. And Jamie Lee's kind of journey as the lead character, the chef's mom who has a lot of struggles in her life and with mental health and with parenting and her identity as a parent versus person and a level of disconnection from the rest of her family, is a really, really fascinating journey to watch on Hulu. Again, Ambassador for, I guess, big TV. And I thought it was a great comparison. I also thought there was something incredibly just, I know the word, I'm sure I've probably already overused it, but meaningful about that episode, because I don't know, there have been episodes that I've really obviously been really upset by, you know, we don't need to circle the wagons around New York season finale and frankly, the reunions, but here I go. That was something that I was like horrified by and had a big reaction. And Beverly Hills, this most recent episode, I can't more highly recommend it. I myself, it was just so meaningful to me. It connected with me in so many ways, some ways that I haven't shared on Andy's Girls that I don't think I'm going to get into today. And that would be something that I just don't feel comfortable discussing. But suffice it to say, I have a connection to suicide and with a loved one. And so for me, having just lost my dad, hearing about, you know, Sutton's experience losing her father and losing her father specifically to suicide, I was just like, I'm never going to stop crying. The well of tears is gushing out of me. And this is one of those episodes. I'm sure there are other episodes that are potentially less upsetting that a person could introduce as a thesis statement of what housewives can be. But for me, this was like, it's an odd way to describe. I don't want to say it's like an ideal episode, just taking a step back, not in any way saying like Sutton's trauma is entertaining, but to say this is an example to me of what the Real Housewives can be, what reality TV can be, which is for some viewers, maybe it's a window, and for other viewers, maybe a mirror of here's someone talking about these incredibly intense things, sort of like an emotional estrangement, maybe I would say, between Sutton and her mom. Absolutely a communication breakdown. Sutton's kind of continued trauma over losing her father specifically to suicide, noting as she did that her mom was there, which added an additional layer to an already very complicated relationship. Seeing Sutton in her childhood house, the house, you know, in which her father died by suicide, watching her go back into that house with her support system, thank God. And her ability to process a lot of like really intense stuff. It's why I get so much agita when people describe housewives as like, you know, the kind of like guilt TV, yada, yada, where I just think, you know, we don't need to assign value in a negative, derogatory way to minimize the experience, maybe of being a Bravoholic or just a fan of television. There's a lot of value that can come of that. But also, and I've gotten into this before, but like the focus on saying that women focused reality television, women led, ideally, I would hope women produced reality TV, although I don't know about those stats, that there's so much value that can come from that. And a lot of kind of like male focused reality TV or TV or sports or whatever are always just assumed to have value, where women's storytelling is so often minimized, including certainly by other women. And I just watched this episode and I was like, people have no fucking idea. And how could you expect them to? Because the overall kind of idea of housewives is that diamonds and rose, is that she. But for a lot of us who've been watching this franchise for many years, we know that it can, there are so many other layers to it. The hook is the millions of dollars or debt, BCC, P. Gander Reed. But also there's so much other stuff, conversations, realities taking place. And I watched that episode, as I said, twice, and I had just a couple takeaways. Investing can sometimes feel overwhelming with all the fancy jargon that makes it seem more complicated than it really is. Maybe all those finance bros just want another thing they can try and mansplain. Well, Acorns believes that anyone can be an investor. That's why they make it so easy to stick to basic, time-tested principles that give your money a chance to grow. Today's episode is sponsored by Acorns. Acorns is a financial wellness app that makes it easy to start saving and investing for your future. You don't need to be an expert. Acorns will recommend a diversified portfolio that matches you and your money goals. You don't need to be rich. Acorns lets you get started with the spare money you've got right now, even if all you've got is spare change. Investing, for me, felt like something I couldn't start without a substantial amount of money on hand. That's why Acorns is so important. Acorns makes it easy for everyone to start investing today. Sign up now and join the over 13 million all-time customers who have already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/andyscrolls or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Tier 1 compensation provided. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/andyscrolls. After the holiday hustle, which I spiritually celebrated at Bluestone Manor, there's nothing like giving your home a little TLC. For me, my decor style is very different throughout my apartment. My living room is really kind of chill, and the office is bright and colorful and fun. And thanks to Wayfair, I was able to find incredible pieces that worked with each individual space in my home. My lighting fixture, which is beautiful, gold, modern, and my air conditioner, necessary when I'm recording an episode where I mention Chris Manzo, is from Wayfair as well. Both of those serve a purpose, but they also look great. I was surprised when I went on Wayfair to see so many necessities, as well as beautiful pieces, lighting, closet organization, spring accents, and more. There's something for every style in every home, no matter your space or budget. Wayfair makes it easy to tackle your New Year's home goals with endless inspiration. They have free and easy delivery, even on the big stuff. Give your home the refresh it needs with Wayfair. Head to wayfair.com right now. That's wayfair.com. Wayfair. Every style, every home.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
First off, there is something so incredible about Sutton being specifically on reality TV and Housewives on a show that requires her, hopefully, to have long-form conversation, whittled down to whatever after a strong edit, about her inner feelings and her subconscious, where you have these confessionals that are quite literally intended to be a housewife providing clarity on their thinking during an edited scene, where it's like, I am my own voice of God saying in this moment, this is how I was feeling about how I was behaving or other people were behaving, or maybe adding a PS after I found out things from a certain scene. It's the connective thread of Housewives episodes. And maybe that also includes a certain level of like validation from obviously members of the cast, maybe also producers. And to watch Sutton go through, honestly, kind of go back in time, which is something I assume she feels in some way like sort of suspended time, frozen time, something she feels probably possibly, what am I saying? Probably, I have no idea. Possibly when she goes back, each time she goes back to Augusta, it's sort of like a just a genuine kind of suspended reality versus I think how Sutton lives her life in real time. But to know that her mom is so obviously closed off or disinterested or I don't want to say confused, but like doesn't maybe confused by or in disbelief by how Sutton wants the two of them to talk and how Sutton would like their relationship to be. There's something genuinely, I know there's a lot that Housewives brings. Like if I'm saying Sutton might get validation from producers, I can only imagine the experience of being a Real Housewife where you have like bajillions of people on social media saying you're a piece of shit. So I guess that might level itself out, to be honest. I don't know if you might come out of that, in the words of Rebecca Minkoff, going clear at the tail end of any given season. But I'm going to think about it in the most optimistic of ways, that there is a positive, there is a net benefit to Sutton doing this show because it requires you to say the words out loud in a scene being filmed, in a confessional later on being filmed, that is integral, like incredibly important, integral to the process of filming Housewives, which she so desperately wants with her mom. Not like the diamonds and rosé of it all, but just having conversations where you are getting to the core of your feelings, or at least owning the fact that you have feelings and would like some, I don't know, in an exchange. And I also thought, you know, there's such a disservice to Sutton for certainly valid reason. We saw it with, or didn't see it rather, with Brandi Glanville, with Sonia, a couple other examples of people who seemingly, because of like divorce decree, children being minors, some sort of agreement with an ex, or maybe just their own decision, we didn't get to see Sutton parent in the ways that we've seen other cast members, including certainly Garcelle and Kyle, who I think of as great parents. We've seen them actively film the act of parenting, which has been really helpful to understand who they are, because that experience for them, as we've heard them say, is like at the core of who they are. And, you know, sometimes in Dorit's case, there almost is like a confusion over how I identify myself, if I can like identify myself and wanting to, in her words, like breathe again outside of being a parent, where she's saying, no, you cannot take that away. That is like at the core of what gives me relief, is knowing my kids are okay. So that's a conversation for another day, and maybe that day is today. But I think for Sutton, it would have, just in an alternate universe, and I'm not saying the decision was a bad one, like there are valid reasons, certainly for the kids' benefit, of not having minor children on the show. We've seen it go wrong. We've seen it go right, but we've seen it go wrong. So it's really just to the detriment of us in understanding Sutton that we don't see that aspect of her. We've seen it with Porter. Once Porter became of age and could make the decision for herself of whether or not she wanted to film the show. I don't remember if we saw it with Sutton's two other kids. They've obviously been mentioned and discussed, but there would be something like almost full circle about that, because so much of Sutton's experience is as a child, like as the daughter of Reba, as the daughter of her dad, I think, whose name was John, but I might be fucking that up, so I apologize. So it just is, it's one of those moments that I just kind of wish we had seen more of, because it would provide additional context, but we have a lot of context here. Also, there was this very quick but very fascinating sort of flashback from, I think, the day prior on this trip to Augusta, when Sutton's talking to her brother about her relationship with her mom. And she's saying, you know, like Reba doesn't, she didn't say Reba. She's like, my mother, our mother, mon père does, mon mère. Oh my God, my French is wonderful. Doesn't get me. And her brother is like, no, she does, but also just remember what she does for a living, which is being a therapist, something I mentioned on a previous or maybe a couple previous episodes of Andy's Girls. I thought I remembered Sutton saying previously that her mom was a therapist. Then I Googled it and Google fucking lied to me or I don't know what and said that she was a social worker. And then on the show, they start talking about her mom being a therapist. That was kind of like a core part of the show, talking about her mom's work as a therapist. And I thought to myself, so I was right, after all. I'm wrong so frequently that I'm just taking this one moment because I do think it's in no way clarifying, I guess, but fascinating that Reba worked as a therapist before retiring, or she's soon to retire, or did that for a large portion of her career. That throwback, though, that flashback from like the day before with Sutton and her brother, where he's saying to her, you know, remember what she does for a living, that she sort of takes a step back from where she's in situations where her job is to maybe be open to emotion, but not be emotional. And Sutton's response is like, well, we're not her patients, we're her family. I thought both points were really interesting. And I wish we had seen more of their conversation. It was fascinating that we didn't get to see. I guess there's only so much time and they wanted to wrap the Augusta trip during this episode. But I really would have loved to see Sun and her brother just kind of like communicate with each other, seemingly appreciate each other, which I love. It seems like from the limited amount we've seen that they have a really positive relationship, and that's fantastic. And I'm glad she has someone who's gone through her childhood with her, who has an understanding that her adult friends do not. Obviously, they weren't there. And is someone who has a different view. And maybe, I don't know if he lives in Augusta or came up to visit her, Sutton, while she was in town, but her brother could have a very different relationship with their mom than Sutton does. I mean, I felt like that was at the heart of so much tension seemingly between Sutton and Reba on the show. So much of it, I think, was about Sutton's relationship with her father, before he died, and with his memory now, versus how Reba looks back on that. And there was a flashback shown, that I don't think was shown in the episode itself, but I think it was shown on the after show, which was from a couple seasons ago, from Sutton opening her store or whatever, having a conversation with her mom, or her mom says something along the lines of like, I don't miss your father. And obviously, that can be an upsetting thing for Sutton to hear. But I also think it gets into the heart of so much of this, which is the simple fact that, as Sutton herself has acknowledged, she had a very specific relationship to her father, but she really doesn't know about her parents' relationship with each other. And her mom can be obviously succinct in how she describes things. And I think for her, I don't know if it's a hardened truth or a focus on being as true to herself as she can without thinking about what she's saying might hurt other people, or maybe she just feels like that's not my responsibility to bear. For whatever reason, her mom just gives like very full-throated, kind of rough responses to things. So I can only imagine Sutton in that moment, like hearing from your mom that she doesn't miss your father who died 20 years ago. It's that thing that I think came up in Garcelle's conversation with Reba. Garcelle, the recipient of the 2025 Profile in Courage Award, for really doing her level best to connect with Reba or genuinely be the messenger. And Reba was like, LOL, go fuck yourself. But there was that moment of talking about death being final, of Garcelle sharing, you know, I wish I could call my mom. There are conversations I wish I could have that I can't as she's died. And that there is something to be said. Death obviously is final, but grief can last forever. Your relationship with grief can last forever. The feeling of grief compounding on top of itself can last forever. Figuring out a way to navigate that as a person in this world, with everything else being foisted upon us, can be really tough to navigate. And I think when we think of death, it being a final act, it being something obviously you can't, if you're that person, come back from, there's also the idea of how family members process that person's death, and how that grief, just figuring out and defining your own relationship with grief, can become kind of the new chapter. How that impacts someone's relationship with the loved one that they've lost, I don't know. I think that Sutton thinks of her dad in a really specific way, in a loving way, but also in a way that still has a lot of living trauma. And I think that there's many reasons for that. As she said, I think maybe she said, or maybe I interpreted this and could have misinterpreted this, but like, she wasn't aware, maybe it wasn't communicated to her. And at this point, she's, you know, in her mid-20s, she has her own independent life, that her dad was dealing with really significant episodes of extreme depression and being overly medicated in Sutton's eyes, and it being a thing that nobody talked about, but her dad being medicated with whatever medicine was being prescribed, but also doing his own self-medicating with alcohol, and trying to figure out a way, I think, for Sutton to kind of navigate this period of time that I think at points seems really clear to her from her memory, but she just has a different relationship with that chapter of her father's life than her mom does. And even when you think of the day of the suicide, her mom being home, it being 2 days before Christmas, it being her mom's first day of, at that point, retirement, I just can't imagine. I mean, Sutton's in the house because she wants to say goodbye at that point to, I think, some of the trauma from the loss of her dad, and specifically the loss to suicide. I think processing any, a child processing any parent's death can be really sort of life-changing, ground shifting. I think when you lose a loved one, specifically, especially a parent, and you lose them to suicide, there's just so much to unpack. And it's not to compare one to the other, but there is just an extra, incredibly unfortunate, upsetting layer, I think, of shame. Where, you know, you hear, you know, let's say you're in conversation with someone, and maybe it's someone you don't know well or whatever, and you're talking about family members, and you mention, I lost a loved one. Think about the difference in maybe that other person's reaction or your own feeling of giving information on that loved one's death. It is different when it deals with mental health and suicide. And that's incredibly unfortunate, but also the reality for a lot of people is that it's still, in the ways that family members are left to process that grief, guilt and shame are embedded so often in processing a loved one's death from suicide, by suicide. That's just different. It can be incredibly upsetting, I would think, because nobody knows what to say really when you're going through the process of losing someone or having lost someone, just kind of like in general to anything. People struggle with figuring out how to support you. And then when you add in this extra nuance of, I don't know how to talk about this thing in society and life, so how do I support them? How do I understand it for myself? There are just so many extra triggers, I would say. It's really kind of a terribly unfortunate landmine. So for Sutton and her family to go through that, and having been brought up in a family where they didn't communicate anything, or at least hearing I love you was not valued or seen as realistic or something that her parents could or wanted to do when you don't have those conversations about feelings and then you're processing this really, really big, complicated event and you're processing it as an adult, but you know, you're that person's child forever. I just think that brings with it so much extra stuff. And Sutton, even in a confessional, sharing that, she said on the after show that she wanted to talk to her mom about the day of her dad's death because she just wanted to understand sort of more about what happened. And she kind of has a little bit of it, like, honestly, not to minimize it, but like a little bit of an aha moment when she's talking about on the after show where she says, in part, I want to release the blame from my mother, because she says on the after show that she still has some resentment there. She doesn't know what happened. She knows that her mom was home. She talks about the fact that, you know, her dad, that there were, her dad was using medications, self-medicating, using alcohol, seemingly not himself, not able to communicate, disoriented. And also there was a loaded gun in the house. She has so much frustration and anger still and sadness, obviously, about what happened, that she talks about still feeling a little, still feeling resentful of her mom about maybe her mom's caring of her father. Who knows what they had access to at that point, 30, I think, around a little less than 30 years ago, around 30 years, was it 30 years or 20 years ago, between 20 and 30, 25, that there, who knows what, I mean, if we're struggling to have this conversation, as so many of us still do at this point, imagine how difficult it was and challenging it was 20 years ago. But also the fact that her mom was home, that there were so many of these things that Sutton just has resentment and obviously regret, obviously, about what happened. And I think a lot of the aftermath where just the doors to emotion were firmly closed. And for her to go on the after show and say, you know, I want to release, I want to try to talk to her about what, about specifically the suicide. And I want to do it to release some of that blame. And also saying, maybe my mother is protecting me and I don't need to know. Those are a lot of really complicated feelings. And Kyle gets into this too. Like she says, I understand Sutton better than now as a result of going on that trip. And she says, it's not a band-aid over Sutton misbehaving and speaking out, but I do have a window into her. And I think the underlying convo there is like, I have more empathy for her when she's behaved in ways that I didn't understand previously. And I'm sure we'll see probably in the next episode and throughout the season, because Sutton is so uncomfortable with feelings and expressing herself that she at points explodes, where it's like things are just kind of spilling out of her. And she doesn't have the ability to kind of help herself, like self-soothe. We've seen that so often in moments of conflict with her where, yeah, you can say that Sutton at points is cold, is quirky, struggles to share how she feels and maybe expects people to understand or not, speaks without thinking, can be overly critical or again, word of the day, succinct. A problem I don't seem to struggle with. When I hope to, possibly one day, that there is something about Sutton that Kyle feels like she really finally understands that she didn't before. And no better way to figure that out than invite a friend over to your childhood home and your weird AF relationship with your mom and throwing all that together. I mean, I remember something shifted quite literally in my relationship with my mother after bringing a college friend home for Thanksgiving while we were in college. And the friend picked up on shit that I had no idea existed. And it just shifted things with my it was specifically with my relationship with my mom, but that's happened with other family members where there's like a friend who understands me in a different universe who visits the original universe and they see things that I'm oblivious to, maybe in denial about, don't understand, which isn't necessarily ideal, but it does add an additional layer. Maybe that in my own experience was me like understanding my family a little bit better. And maybe for Sutton and Sutton's friends, it's understanding Sutton a little bit better and Sutton through this process, potentially understanding herself a little bit more. I don't know there. I just like I could talk about this episode forever. I almost want to say like this is going to be a two-parter, even though there is a whole other episode coming. But I do feel like there is a lot to say. Sutton talking about when it comes to regrets and possibly resentment, Sutton saying that her dad was talking about suicide, was also not kind of aware of things in his environment, that he wasn't going to therapy. She said his treatment was so disjointed, his non-treatment. I think a lot of people can connect with that, with maybe we don't know because we weren't obviously there and we don't know Reba aside from Sutton's relationship with Reba and the limited amount that we've seen of her on the show. I can only imagine being in that environment where like things are happening, but nobody is talking about them. And I don't know how much of that is denial. I don't know how much of that is fear, because as we heard from Sutton, they were trying a lot of different things and it wasn't working. So I can't imagine, I'm not just going to say Reba was like potentially denying the reality. I mean, she might have been existing so fully in that reality. And if you don't know what to do and nothing is working, I could understand, wish it wasn't like this, but I could understand an environment where like nobody knows what to say. And yeah, denial being at I think the core of a lot of this, but to know the ending here of his life and to try to figure out what happened before his death, I think it's just incredibly complicated. And for Sutton not having a lot of information about what happened or having the kind of relationship with her mom where feelings were really communicated to each other, where she felt cherished, where she felt valued, where she felt affection, heard affection, felt love. I think there's a lot here that she's trying to handle. And I can only imagine, you know, Sutton saying, I had to my mom made me make my father's recipe of crab cakes the day after he died. He died 2 days before Christmas. The day after he died was Christmas Eve. Her mom, immediately after his death, making her, quote unquote, crab cakes because her mom loved to eat them for a Christmas Eve dinner that they had. It is a sort of alternate universe that you're in. And something so interesting that was the dish that Sutton prepared on this trip. She's preparing her father's recipe for crab cakes, something that she loved, that she reminds her of him. And maybe, I mean, her mom obviously like loves the taste because she says that they all fucking love crab cakes forever. But also how interesting that like in this conversation of Sutton wanting to talk about feelings, talk about not feeling maybe loved or appreciated or whatever, her mom sharing why she doesn't want to say words and stuff. But them having that meal that is so meaningful to both of them, maybe for different ways. I mean, it's obviously something she knows her mom's going to like. So maybe that's it. It's like game over. Like, great. I know my mom's going to love this, so I'm going to make it. But and it is also an act of love to prepare that food, but also to know it's her father's recipe, to me, added another layer, an interesting one that I was honestly kind of fascinated by. And also, there's so much I think that Sutton is still going through. She says, you know, I wish she's talking about, you know, being back in the house and then saying, I think it was in a confessional, but it might have been directly to Garcelle and Kyle. I wish I had five more minutes. Like, I wish I had five more minutes with my father. She's saying he was out of it. He was barely conscious. She used to, I think it was like, they used to maybe high five or something or hold hands or something when they were saying goodbye. And the last time she saw him, she's standing in the room where she last saw her father alive. And she like wiggled his toe because he wasn't able to really communicate and connect. He was so out of it. And she's saying to them or in a confessional or whatever, you know, like, I wish I had five more minutes. Why didn't I sit down? It was selfish of me. And I just think there's something so wrenching and beautiful about the five more minutes, but also you can never have enough time. So I don't think it was selfish of Sutton, obviously. I think there's still a lot of internalized stuff for her to work through. It honestly kind of makes me think a little bit about my dad dying, because this is a real upper of an episode. Holy shit. Because the last sort of conversation I had with him was a really bad conversation. It didn't go well. It was also one of the more clearly honest conversations that we had with each other. And I feel a lot of, and I've been processing with my psychiatrist in like environments in which that is appropriate, feeling a lot of guilt about that. But also, it was, we had such a complicated relationship that, and also the guilt of his brain injury and everything else, there was stuff that was so confusing but also very clear. And what I am so thankful for is that I didn't necessarily get to have another conversation with him. He died a couple weeks after that happened. I spent the last week with him, but when I arrived, after my mom called and was like, you know, we're nearing the end here, when I arrived, he was already sort of unconscious, except there were things when my mom would be like, open your mouth so we can like do yada yada. He would do it. So before he really slipped away. So I feel for Sutton with the five more minutes, but also I'm so thankful that I had five more minutes, because even though he wasn't able to like communicate with me, I was able to show affection. I was able to say, I love you. We were not a family that expressed affection. There's a lot about Sutton's childhood that I really connect with. And, you know, toward the end of his life, we started to say, I love you until we stopped. Because he said he couldn't say it anymore. He said he didn't understand what love was. And I respected his wishes. I stopped saying it. But then when, you know, final chapter, fading away, I was like, motherfucker, I'm going to say I love you. Like, this is the thing about the five more minutes. You wish in that time. I assume that Sutton wishes in that time. I could have said all these things. But the person that you're sort of almost romanticizing and thinking, I wish I was able to connect that last 5 minutes. I mean, maybe she just wanted to sit on a couch with him for five more minutes, which I can completely understand. I would want that too. But also, if you think you're going to have that moment of having those conversations, I tried having them with my dad. He wasn't open to it. So the gift that I was so grateful for, that I kind of gave to him and to myself, was, even though I wish he had been able to communicate back with me, and who knows, he might have been open to it, that I was still able to communicate to him. So, you know, it's like carrying the burden of like this sort of sad last conversation, which was, you know, was what it was. But also, I had like however many days of being able to sit with my parent and say, I love you, and say, it's okay, and say, I forgive you. There's an episode, I'm super behind on The Pit, which I highly recommend on HBO Max. Noah Wiley is playing Mark Green because his original ER character was not available. I guess there's also some litigation around the pit and ER and profit shares and stuff. So there's that. But as a show, I really recommend it. And I'm behind on episodes, but there's ironically an episode that came out about two adult siblings struggling with, I don't think this is a spoiler. This is not a spoiler. Their dad dying. Like they walk in the door, you know, dad's on death's door. And so I watched the episode. This might be a partial spoiler. Spoiler, dad does in fact die. Like that's really not a spoiler. If you watch The Pit, you know what I'm talking about. It's not a spoiler. But there's a conversation that Noah Wiley, also known as Mark Green, but not Mark Green, but absolutely Mark Green, has with them where he's like, here are the four things that, that you know, people wish they could say or that people usually say or want to say before a loved one dies. And I wish I could name them to you now. And I did do my level best to share them in an Instagram story that's long expired. But the four things that you should like say to a loved one or whatever before they rest in peace. And just watch the episode. This is an advertisement to get an HBO Max free trial. But it was kind of an LOL moment for me because it's like after my father died, I was like, now you're airing this episode. But then I said out loud, he was like listing the things and I'm going to fuck him up. But it was like, I love you. I know you love me. I'm sorry. I forgive you. Like these tenets that are an incredible way to kind of close the door, close the loop. Maybe leave the door ajar, filled with love and remembrance. But it was kind of an LOL for me because I was like, you couldn't have aired this while my father was still actively dying. I would have appreciated it. But then I realized, actually, the things that Noah Wiley, Mark Green, is a different character from the one he played on ER. But again, there was a lawsuit. So there we are. That I had actually, in fact, said those things actually a couple times to my dad while he was in his final days, which I'm so thankful for. So it's like, you know, I get it. There's a lot to connect with, even though we have not lived Sutton's experience nor her relationship specifically with her mom. But there was a lot on the episode that I thought was fascinating. You know, that moment of Sutton at the end of the episode saying to and with her mom, I just want us to do better. And her mom saying, we can do better. Like, this was a really kind of intense episode, but one that had a fair amount of optimism and promise. And there was something Kyle said that I thought was really important earlier on before that conversation. And I don't think she had said it directly to Sutton. I think she had said it to us, but it was really like, understand your mom's capacity. It doesn't mean that you don't, I'm going to give the long form version of what she said in like five words, but like your mom isn't going to change who she is and probably not how she behaves. That isn't really all of why Sutton is here doing this. It's also for Sutton to like relieve herself of the burden that she's been carrying, of upset, of anger, of maybe shame, of hurt, of whatever else. That it there's still value, but the goal can't necessarily be, and now we change, because you have to try to meet that person where they are, especially because her mom is in her 80s and there's just a different chapter to their relationship that's now taking place. But it sounds like it's one that potentially has promise. I mean, I get Sutton being insulted when she's talking about the whole capsule collection thing and her mom and like, oh, and, you know, it's very complicated. Like she's sort of, I don't think she's intentionally doing this, but like sort of speaking down to her mom. But she's like, you know, it's very complicated what I do. She's trying to prove that she's a business person. She doesn't feel valued by her mom. So she's like, these are all the steps that I do. Like, there's a lot of stress here. Like, we order it here. They send it there to ship. Then they make it in a different country and then they send it back. And her mom saying, oh, that's like how they make ground beef. I actually understood as a longtime vegetarian what her mom was saying. Like, yeah, they say it was made here, but they send it there, they process it there, and then they send it back. Sutton certainly looked a little startled, a little not thrilled about that comparison and says in response, like, this isn't ground beef. This is like not Chanel, but like whatever. Great stuff. Expensive apparel. I could understand being in Sun's position and be like, no, it's not fucking ground beef. It's fashion. Unless you're Lady Gaga, in which it can be both, from the meat dress from years ago. Vintage meat and I guess thread or rope. I don't know how they assembled it, but like a flank steak and a heel. I think I understood like Sun obviously being annoyed at that. Like I totally get it. But I also honestly just between us did understand what Reba was saying because it is kind of like a crazy process. And she goes to the grocery store and that's her way of connecting or understanding it for herself. I mean, there's a lot there with Reba at the beginning of this of the episode, having that like really kind of lovely conversation with Kyle that I wish she had with Sutton, where she's talking about, but sometimes you're more open with some people versus others, and the others might be your kids. Reba saying, you know, talking about her relationship with her father and saying, you know, I was his favorite child. He taught me to be very strong and independent. Which I thought was interesting. And I think underneath there, well, she gets into it later. She was raised in the, how'd she call it? WW2 post, I think is how she described it. Like post-World War II. Obviously, there's like an understandable scarcity mindset. People are focused on survival. They're not, the environment wasn't one that was filled necessarily with like, I love you and everything else. That was the environment in which Reba was raised. I don't know if she was sharing that because that's how things should happen, or she was sharing it as an example of that's why she is the way she is and why she wants to choose to continue to. I also think Reba talking about her relationship with her dad and talking about being very strong and independent, I thought to myself, this is like, I don't know if this is fucked to say, but I just kind of thought to myself, like, is she saying that the reason, later on she's talking about the World War II of it all, is she saying that the reason she didn't hear I love you was because of that generation and what they had survived and what she went through as a child? How much of her not feeling comfortable with talking in emotional, nurturing ways, in the ways that Sutton wants to be treated, how much of that has to do with like how Reba was raised, including by her father? She calls herself his favorite child. I don't disagree with her, obviously. I have no idea. I take her at her word that that was her relationship with him, her relationship to him. How much of it was like because of the reasons that I just explained or expressed? How much of it was like, well, I didn't hear it from him. So what does that say if it's like a quote unquote easy or necessary thing to say and I didn't receive it? I don't know if that makes any sense. Like for me, I'm thinking about like Reba's experience as a child. And if she's being asked to do things that Sutton wants her to do, maybe Reba just didn't want to do it and wasn't that person. Maybe she didn't need it, was raised in an environment where it wasn't important. As she says, people don't tell you that you're pretty. People didn't tell me that I was pretty, but I figured out how to, you know, continue moving forward in my life, where she didn't need those things. She was focused on her skills. She's just a different personality type in that way than Sutton is. Or maybe potentially in a different universe, maybe she would have, if she had felt safe and open to, felt the way that Sutton felt about like, well, I wish that my parent had done these things. She's decided for herself. She understands the reality of the situation, has decided for herself she doesn't want it. And I get it. She might not. But also there is a third option here, or a fifth. I don't know how many I listed, 17, where she's kind of in denial about what she might have needed. That is me going on. That's me like really swerving left, because there's no evidence of that. She doesn't ever say, she's clearly says, like, why am I not taking this woman at the word? I'm at her word. I'm just saying, in the words of Connor Roy, it's a curio. I'm just saying it's an interesting thing in an alternate universe to potentially alternate universe fan fiction style kind of consider. Garcelle has some stuff about Reba. She says at one point, she's like in a confessional saying she thinks that Reba was shut down, and then sort of stops herself and says, you know, I wonder, in fact, if Reba was jealous of Sutton's relationship with her dad, with Reba's husband, that maybe it was, I don't know, more connective than her marriage. An interesting sort of atomic bomb, but like interesting insight. I was just kind of like, oh shit, we're saying this stuff out loud. And yeah, that's a good question. That's a real good question. Obviously, as she has said, as Reba said previously, she's saying, I don't miss your father. I don't miss my husband, my former husband. I don't know what her feelings are about Sutton's relationship with her, you know, then husband, with Sutton's forever dad. I don't know. I also think it's interesting when her mom is talking about like, well, I didn't need these things. I don't need this stuff to survive. Or I didn't need this stuff maybe to even thrive. I didn't need to be nurtured in that way or coddled, really, is what Reba is saying. That's how she views it. And I just wonder how much of that is also because Sutton is an extension of herself. Like, how much of this is, you know, Reba's joking on point. She's like, you turned into me. Like, you became an independent woman and a working, you know, working lady and working girl. And isn't it funny? Ha ha ha. Like, you turned into me. Like, how much of that, Sutton doesn't appreciate the humor at that point, but how much of Reba is looking at Sutton as an extension of herself, where she's like, you don't need these things because I don't need them. But also, maybe I'm not going to give them to you because I know I don't need them for myself. Like, I'm intentionally, I guess, withholding things, or quote unquote, I know you don't need them because I don't need them and you are me. Like, there's some, and also, like, Sutton, obviously, her relationship with her dad, child of her dad, being an extension of her father. I don't know how much tension there is from that. This is literal Tennessee Williams, like literal Tennessee Williams. And also Reba saying, this is the name of the episode, is probably, and also I can imagine Reba saying, I don't need to say I'm proud of you. And also saying, you know, I love you is inconsequential. Maybe if you're saying I love you and it's just kind of like a nothing burger to somebody else, it can be inconsequential. Ideally, it's not when you're saying it to your kid. Like, how the way that other people use these words is, to me, ideally outside the value of it in conversation with your child telling you they would like to hear them. If it is inconsequential to Reba, if she thinks to herself, I love you is used too much by other people and maybe by me, I don't see the need or value in it, you should know, it's still important to her child. It's not inconsequential to Sutton. You can't make the argument that it is. If you can, I think it's a bad one. I don't think it's a fight you're going to win. I think Sutton's clearly saying there's stuff that she would like to have. Some of that is denying it. Some of it is trying to tell her she's wrong, but she still wants it. So I think for Sutton, it's trying to figure out, okay, this person can't give the thing that I wish they would, like saying those words out loud, but they can show it to me in different ways. Like her mom readily agreeing to go to California. Like Sutton posing the question, I know you don't like to travel. Her mom immediately being like, I'm okay traveling as long as I don't stay in that one bedroom or whatever. Her mom is potentially able to show Sutton that love that her mom just like assumes Sutton knows that she has, that Sutton is saying repeatedly she doesn't, in different ways. And I guess one of those ways is going to support her at this like upcoming fashion show, Capsule Collection Catwalk, which I am thankful for. I'm thankful to both of them that they're able to connect in that way. Man, I just, it's why I could literally, I really do kind of feel like I could talk about this episode for another 8,000 years. So before I kind of wrap, there were a few other things that happened that, again, I do get into in that upcoming AG. There were layers there unrelated to Tennessee Williams and Augusta. One, just kind of a question for me as a renter. Erica is spending tens of thousands of dollars to like renovate this house that she doesn't own. Why is she doing that? Like a paint job, great. Furniture that she can take with her, great. I don't know. What's her lease? Like, is she going to be there for a long time? You're not worried about your safety deposit? Like, what? It's a lot of work to do on a house you don't own. But maybe she is going to be there for a minute. And so great. So mazel tov, I guess. The scene with Keely and not with Keely, the scene with Bo's and her daughter talking about Keely, her daughter, you know, Bo's saying to her, her kiddo, you know, how do we feel about me maybe having another kid? How would you feel about that? And her daughter saying, I give you my A-OK. I give you my approval. Our bond is changing, which I thought was such an incredible, emotionally intelligent, mature way to think of it. Because I would assume if you are an only child and there might be another bambino joining the family, I could understand some feeling of like, no, thank you. I'm good. We're all set here. We don't need another. I don't need a sibling. I'm good to go. Not like competition, but just like that could be a feeling, especially if you've lived a specific kind of life with your mom for so long where you are each other's person. And maybe now there's another person entering the picture. The fact that Bose's daughter, I think Bose's daughter saying, you know, our bond is changing. So it's not that I'm losing something, but like maybe a little, it's not that she's losing Bose's daughter, but like Bose's daughter's growing up. She's gonna become more independent and then independent and like disconnect in certain ways. Their relationship is going to change. That's healthy and normal. So for her to have the maturity to be like, our bond is changing, it would be good for you and good for us potentially for you to create a new bond. Doesn't lessen ours, but ours is changing regardless. I just thought that was so impressive. I was like, holy shit. I think if I was an only child, I would absolutely be like, no, thank you. All my time. Although I do remember I used to beg my mom to have another kid when I was little, a girl, because I thought she could sort of be like, honestly, a servant to me, is what I was thinking when I was, I think, in the single digits. I did tell Toby, it's time for us to expand our family. And I think my thinking behind that was I would like someone to like do my chores. So I don't remember how old I was, but I remember thinking that for like more time than a person would hope that I was. I really truly was like, someone should be helping me with my life. So I would like to have a sister who can be my unpaid executive assistant. A pickles, as it were. So anywho, so we have that scene, all fine and good. I don't know Keely at all. So I think we're going to, but this is our first season meeting Bo's, but Bo's feels like integral to the cast at this point. She is so important. So I'm sure next, and I think they're like still happily together, committed. She said on the after show, we now say we love each other all the time. I don't know about the kind of us talking about having a kid and not using the word I love you when you're having a conversation about like the biggest possible commitment you could have. You know, the timing of that, it's like a little bit of a jolt, the swap. But it seems seemingly all worked out. They're better than ever, moving things forward. And speaking of better than ever moving things forward, poor, sweet, dumb Dorit. I mean that with love. Dorit, denial Dorit, it exists. It needed to happen. I know that Erica, you know, was feeling a certain way about not being invited to Augusta. Thank God she was in LA. I don't know the timing of when that LA pizza party, another pizza party for Erica Jayne, was filmed. I don't know if it was like right when the rest of the cast was in Augusta, but it needed to be Bose and it needed to be Erica, because Dorit going through this whole thing of like, you know, he's just sent me a threatening 7-9 page email, but it's okay because we had a conversation and he seemed nice. And also Bose and Erica's response both being like, yeah, that doesn't seem great. That feels like that could be a trick. Dorit's reaction to that being like, oh no, he's not that person. That other man wasn't my husband. He's not that person. He was just raging. I'm thinking like, no, Dorit, like this is going to be, if Dorit is still feeling some feelings of denial about who PK is, no better way to come out of that denial than divorce this man, because he seems relatively chaotic, impulsive, whatever else. He is the guy who's quote unquote the monster. He is the guy who's going to send you that threatening email. I also saw a post from the Bravo docket. I know Dorit's like, he's not going to treat me crazy like how he is in business or whatever. Erica's confessional saying he's a ruthless person, he's ruthless in business and will be in divorce. Amen, sister. And if you go to the Bravo docket's Instagram, they're working on an upcoming episode about PK and litigation, allegedly comedy podcast, but like for real, they're going through like quite literal just legal documents, so this is all stuff on the record and whatnot. And I can't wait to listen to that episode, and also just what they shared on social of him dodging, skipping depositions, being incredibly ruthless in fighting millions of dollars of debt that people, including casinos, are trying to collect, and loans and stuff, allegedly, comedy podcast. It's just, there's a lot there. He is a lot of guy, a lot of person, a lot of PK. Awful lot, some of which I guess Dorit was aware of. I just think hopefully she's taken a moment, she's taken a breath, and really she seems shocked and not annoyed. I'm just going to say shocked about what Bose and Erica were saying, but I hope that she listened to them, especially in the months that have passed between that scene and now, because her trying to disassociate from other sides of PK, he is a nuanced guy, but her trying to be like, no, those layers that absolutely exist that I talked about previously aren't really him. No, they're all him, sweetie. Like, they're all, he is impulsive. He can be mean. He can be cruel. There's a lot there that you're going to be dealing with. And she gets into something on the after show. She says something along the lines of, you know, he essentially, with that email, he used a sledgehammer to open a nut, which is, I think, an appropriate way to describe his effort. But also she says something along the lines of like, I want to understand him. Like, even if we don't end up together, even if we get a divorce, I would like to understand why he behaves in the way he does, because she's thinking about co-parenting. And there's something incredible about that. Like, I want to praise Dorit for like having that kind of grace and focus where she's really thinking like, how can I provide the best possible life for my children, the best environment for them? And if that requires, or maybe I'm just curious about understanding the more complicated layers of PK, that can only be a benefit to us co-parenting. But I'm also thinking, like, I don't think he's going to be open to sharing that with you. If he wasn't the entirety of your marriage, I don't know why you think he would be now, unless you're intending to get a forensic accountant for his heart. And I don't mean literal cardiologists. I mean, like, his spirit. I don't know how that's going to work. I would assume it will come at a healthy distance. I'm guessing you're not going to get the best of PK moving forward if this swerves right. Like, and I don't mean correct, although I would argue that is the probable next step here. listen, there's a lot there to unpack. So anyway, this was just a short, another, again, short mini episode. I cried 80 times. But I just felt like that Beverly Hills hot dog, hot damn and hot dog and some mustard. It was incredible. And a scrambled egg sandwich with mayo. It was really just one of those episodes that I honestly think deserved it. I really do think it did. And so thanks for being on this journey. There is, as I mentioned, 30 to 80 times going to be another episode coming up with Vanessa from Real Moms of Bravo. We're going to get into that, into Beverly Hills with Vanessa, who's wonderful. So look for that episode soon. And speaking of episodes, I want to record a Satchel Spectacular. Going to Rhodey. I'll be en route to Rhode Island while you're listening to this episode, mañana, also known as Saturday. And so during that time, I'll certainly do an Ask Me Anything on Instagram stories because I do that most times I travel to Rhode Island. I don't know why it's become a tradition at this point. But also message me your satchels of gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Clorne Ben-Simone, because I would love to record a Satchel Spectacular while I'm in Rhodey bringing my recording equipment. Wow, wow, wow. What can't she do? So let me know your thoughts and feels. Maybe it's about Beverly Hills. Maybe it's about Potomac. Thank fucking God that the reunion starts Sunday. Thank God. Also, I'm on my Married to Medicine journey. As AGs know, Married to Medicine is my number one favorite show on Bravo. I've obviously seen every episode. Don't get me started on the season 5 reunion, which I've discussed many, many times. The most impactful, important reunion that's like ever happened on Bravo. Like it was a real divorce court, but also vow renewal situation, etc. But I was behind on this season because of, you know, my father passing away. It changed my availability for shows and recording. So I'm catching up now. Season 11, a couple episodes in. Who knew that Phaedra was a lifeguard in college? I'm learning an awful lot. That's not the biggest takeaway, but it was a takeaway. And frankly, in a scene with Dr. Greg, you're really going to be focused on everybody else. So working my way through Married to Med. And if you are new to the Married to Medicine journey, how dare you, but also welcome. It is the best show on Bravo. And I am truly, for an episode focused on like guilt and shame, the guilt and shame I feel about not having been up to date with Married to Med 11. So I'm catching up. Certainly, you can hear me talk about other seasons on earlier episodes of Andy's Girls. And I absolutely hope to record a Taking It Personally about 11, because I think the reunion is like literally about to happen. So you could send me satchels about Married to Med, but I'm not going to understand them if they're about 11 until I'm fully caught up. But I'm on that journey now. And also other stuff, New York, Beverly Hills, Salt Lake City. Just let me know your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns. Include your first name in town or be anonymous. Happy for that too. And you may hear them unpacked on an upcoming Patreon episode. Again, the number one way to support the pod. Join the Andy's Girls Patreon at patreon.com/AndysGirls. And I always forget how to say Andy's Girls when I say that out loud. I don't know why. It's for some real muscle memory atrophy taking place. And you can follow me on Instagram once again at Dame Galley. Thanks for listening to this episode. You know, it's the season of crying, apparently. And I create my own safe space at points recording in the Clawfest. It is often a trust fall exercise and one in which I'm talking to you guys, but also myself. So thankful to all of you. And then there we are. I'm not crying again. That would be ridiculous. On that note, I don't know. Watch Married to Medicine, okay? If we all got our homework. And if you haven't watched 1 through 10, well, hop on it, okay? Just quit everything, starting with work, number one, least important thing for all of us in our lives. And just tell the children to play tag outside. And it's just a couple hundred episodes. That's very quick to do. But I'm excited for that journey and excited for you to have listened to this episode. You made it to the final part, and I never end it. And when you think I always do like an extra 2 minutes, because that's just fun. It's just fun. All right. It's not just a platitude or whatever. Love you guys. And thanks for listening. And I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.